Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Healing Through Hurt Talk Radio. I'm your host, Maria Wall, and as always, I'm here with my wonderful co-host, Miss Rebecca East, and Cheryl, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Hey!
Hey!
How are you? Cheryl is having some technical difficulties, so she may be coming in and out on us, but welcome, Cheryl. I'm glad that you've finally gotten through with your move. Cheryl also made a move on us, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, I'd like to thank you for joining us here on Healing Through Hurt Talk Radio. Tonight, our special guest is Ms. Susan Guerin. She's a publicist and a former child advocate. If you'd like to call in and speak with Susan, our number is 646-478-4726. And as always, we're going to start our show with our usual announcements and disclaimers. Okay? The views, statements, and or comments of show guests, callers, or hosts do not necessarily reflect the views or beliefs of the Wall Foundation, Inc., or Healing Through Hurt Talk Radio. These comments are those of our guests, callers, and hosts alone. Therefore, the Wall Foundation, Inc. and or Healing Through Hurt Talk Radio is not party to nor liable for resolution of issues between show guests, callers, hosts, and or listeners. Okay, enough with that. We have lost Cheryl again. One quick announcement. I had mentioned this a few weeks ago. We have an author who's trying to get her book published, and she needs 1,000 signatures. So if you all would go to www.leslie, L-E-S-L-I-E-J, Payne, P-A-Y-N-E.com, and click on the Mr. Nobody link and sign up for the updates. She would appreciate it because she needs 1,000 signatures to get the book published. It's about a gentleman who grew up with a lot of obstacles in his life, who eventually became a wonderful husband, father, and man of God. So if you can, go to the website, sign up for Mr. Nobody Smith, and help her get those 1,000 signatures. Okay. As I said, today we have a very special guest. Miss Susan Guerin will be with us. She is a publicist and a former child advocate. She's also the publicist for our guest next week, Susanna Barlow, and we'll get into that a little bit later on in the show. But tonight, our show is about Susan, and I'd like to welcome Susan to our show right now.
Hi.
Susan? Hi.
Hi, how are you this evening?
my co-host, Rebecca East, is on as well.
Hi, Rebecca.
Well, Susan. Hello, how are you?
Good.
Good.
I'm sorry for our listeners, I'm a little under the weather tonight, so please forgive me if my voice sounds a little raspy. I'm a bit ill. Again, our number is 646-478-4726. And Susan, I had just told our listeners just a little bit about what you do as a publicist and a former child advocate. So, and I thought that when we had initially spoke, she's actually, again, Susan is the publicist for Susanna Barlow, the author of What Peace There May Be. And she'll be our guest next week. But this week, our focus is on Susan because I thought that Susan had an interesting and wonderful story of her own to tell. So, Susan, welcome to our show, and we're going to turn the mic over to you so
okay,
that you
well,
can tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, let me see. See, I've moved to Utah recently, about a year and a half ago, to become a producer for a radio talk show. And that's how I met Susanna Barlow when I heard her being interviewed on the show prior. As I was coming in, I could hear her in the producing room. I could hear her being introduced, and I saw her book and was talking to the producer and was wowed by her. And so prior to that, I was a child advocate as a volunteer. I did that for over 20 years. That was just part of what I did. But what got me involved in that is I was just outraged at what was going on up in the Pacific Northwest in the state that I came from with what I saw happening with children. Actually, I ended up testifying before the House and the Senate on some bills. And during this time, an attorney came over to me and said, I think this is a great bill that you're working on. And he represented clients only, juvenile clients only. And he says, I have no laws to apply to my clients. I'm actually taking animal rights laws and applying them to the children. And I was just horrified. I said, that makes me sick to think that we think more of our animals than we do our children.
Wow.
So, I was like blown away.
So
our
children
are brain protected by
animal rights laws.
Yes.
Wow.
And we had 34 children die at the hands of parents that the state kept giving them chance after chance after chance. And I was just like, wow, we need to be thinking about the best interest of the child, not the best interest of the parent. And
that's
that would
true.
Be great to have the child back if it was a safe place and the parent was showing and following through with what the court required, but to let them fail over and over and over and risking the child is not okay, in my book.
What state was this in?
This was in Oregon, but unfortunately, I don't feel that Oregon is any different than all of the rest of the states from the way that the state does not make good parents.
What part of Oregon, may I ask?
In the Portland area.
Oh, that's interesting. I've had plenty of experience in the Portland area with actually having been in foster care myself and having a CASA. Were you a CASA?
No, I was not a CASA. I just did this on my own, which I liked because I didn't have the constraints that a CASA would have. We actually had a team, and that consisted of the attorney, the caseworker, the CASA, and not every child gets a CASA.
Oh, I know.
So there, and for the audience out there, a CASA stands for a court-appointed special advocate, and they're supposed to be the voice for the child. So they're limited, and they're volunteers. They're limited because they can't talk about the case. I could talk about the case. And the child gave permission to me, and it was very unusual that I was to sit at the counsel table. That's not normal either. The judge allowed me to sit at counsel table at the child's request.
Wow.
Normally I would have sat behind where the CASA sits and the caseworker, unless the caseworker is up to the, is at the counsel table for some reason.
Wow.
Which they were at times, so.
That's very interesting. Again, and guests, if you'd like to call in and talk with Susan, our number is 646-478-4726. I just can't get over the fact that, laws for animals are being applied for our children. And these are things that people just don't even think about are the facts that, you know, our children really don't have any real legal, what's the word, protection or representation or statutes that protect them. And you know, a lot of times people wonder why the children are running, you know, amok nowadays. I don't know. I'm not too sure what to say about that.
It was very interesting that attorneys and judges were testifying as well, and I was shocked. And you know, you watch on the news where they have animals that are abused, and everyone wants to adopt the animal, and I'm going, hello. We have children that they are, this was at this time, and that we don't even have laws for. But, you know, you can get people excited about and outraged about abused animals, but why are we not getting excited and outraged? And if they knew about what was going on in our system with these children, and usually they don't find out until it happens somehow in their own families, and then they find out that the very agency that was supposed to protect their children doesn't always do that. Because what I found, unfortunately, was egos got in the way big time. I've had caseworkers actually take me, they say, I'm going to take you on. And they have said to me that they are God. And I'm like, what? I couldn't believe it. I was just like, wow.
They're God. Oh.
Yeah, they are, and that's not all of them. I'm not saying that all of them are. There's some good ones out there that really do care, but some of them, because they get into a power struggle, and that's how I got involved. And I heard one of a friend of mine was a foster mom, and she was advocating strongly for the two children in her care, and she made the agency very angry, and so they removed the children from her, and then she regained custody of the child. And I read the case, and I was so outraged, I started helping her. Never met her before, but while I was down testifying in Salem, one of the attorneys asked me if I'd heard of this woman, and I said, no, I have not. That's a very unusual name. I would remember that. And I get home, there's another attorney that has left a message that the same woman wants to get a hold of me. I thought, well, that's pretty weird. So I ended up sitting down and talking to her, read the case, and was so upset that I just started digging in. I said, I'll help you. And then she regained custody of this child. And this child, the adoption was almost completed when she keeled over and died of a pulmonary embolism in front of the child in the hospital.
Wow.
And the attorney for the mother to be, the adoptive mother to be, called me and said, she's at the hospital and he's with her. And I said, well, I'll go get him. And he says, no, you don't understand. She died. And I took him home for a year and a half, and he lived with me, and I became his educational surrogate, his intervener, his guardian ad litem, and those were all appointments that were given to me by the court. And so he has no family other than me. He calls me mom. He's 20, going to be 24.
And how old was he when you?
Seven.
He was seven. Wow.
Mm-hmm. I didn't realize how long I had been working on the case. I recently, prior to moving to Utah, decided it was time he had his files, and I started going through them. I thought I'd only been doing it for 11 years, and I went back and I go, oh, it was 14 years that I had worked on his case.
Wow. And now he considers you mom, and you're his only family.
I am. They terminated the parental rights on all the other siblings. He was one of six. He was number five in birth order. And, And then his first caseworker that came in and found him ended up years and years later being his caseworker again. And so some of the history that I had read, I wanted to clarify, and she confirmed what I had read had been true. So
wow.
That was, yeah.
And for what you did as the advocate, for people out there that are interested, is there special training that's needed for that? Or are there other ways that people can get involved to just lend that hand? Because I know that some of these agencies must be overwhelmed with, you know, the backlog and the incoming files of children that need that protection and help.
Well, for CASA, you do have to go through training. You are bound by the confidentiality. And they've actually asked me to be a CASA, and I said, no, I've done nearly 20 years of this, and it's hard. It's not for, because you're having to, I learned so much. One thing, I learned things that I never thought I would learn, nor did I want to learn them, and I didn't have any training whatsoever. I just learned, you know, they threw me the football, and I ran with it. And just by trial and error, figuring things out and being resourceful and knowing how to get things done. But you just learn, you know. You have to be strong. You have to be willing to do research and looking for answers. You know, you may not get the answer the first phone call, and it's being willing to take the time and get on the phone. And, I mean, some days it could be 8-10 hours. And then there would be periods of quiet, and then other times I would walk in and all heck had broken loose and we might have an emergency meeting, or, you know, you just never knew. So you had to be flexible and able to handle some of the stuff that you had to hear, because it wasn't pleasant. And I was talking most of the time with male attorneys. His one attorney for years that held onto his case was a male attorney, and then the caseworkers came and went, and then we had the same CASA for several years. So we were very fortunate. That does not always happen. You know, the turnover rate is pretty high.
I think that one of the things that you had mentioned is the fact that you just got up and did it. So a lot of people who are sitting back making up excuses why they will not get involved. In essence, there's really no excuse. These children cannot fight or defend themselves. And if we all put ourselves in their shoes for a moment, we would want someone to step up and fight for us as well. For those of us who do have the time, and the tenacity, I guess, and the strength to be able to deal with what you may see and or hear. I think that you're needed. Your services are needed somewhere. Again, if you'd like to call in, or if you have any questions for our guests in our chat room, if you do not want to be on air, you can type your question in the chat room, and I will read it for Susan. And if you'd like to call in on number 646-478-4726. We're speaking with Susan Guerin this evening. She's a publicist and a former child advocate. Susan, I do have another question. Do you know some of the statistics as far as males and females who are in the system and or abused, because a lot of times people tend to stereotype and think, you know, it's just females that are abused, when in essence it happens to both males and females, more so than people may realize.
Well, I don't know the actual numbers. I do know in this particular case that the child divulged sexual abuse by the male foster parent. to himself. Yes. And that was horrific. He, you know, he was absolutely terrified, and we he divulged it to me, and I, you know, I'm trying to keep my cool because I'm just not a very happy camper because I'm watching this terrified child tell me what went down. And so after I got him calmed down and into bed, I went and got on the phone and called his therapist and his attorney. And she says, "And how are you doing?" That's when I lost it. I just started blubbering, like, you know, I'm just like, ah! You know, it was horrible because I was so angry watching this child tell me what had gone down. And then we went through the CARES program, which is he was actually microscopically examined by a team up there. And I had to fill out questionnaires whether I had sex in front of him, whether I had read pornography or, you know, did anything inappropriate. I go, whoa, whoa, whoa. And it was, the police were there. Also, and his therapist was there. His CASA was there. His attorney was there. And I was there. It was not a fun procedure to go through. You know, I'm just trying. And then you have to deal with the aftermath of this child who's absolutely terrified. And, you know, once those words come out of their mouth, and, you know, and then you're afraid to leave them with anyone.
Right. We have a caller coming on board.
Okay.
Let's see. Hello, caller. Are you there? Caller? Uh-oh, we may have lost the caller. Well, caller, you feel free to call back. I think we lost the caller.
So, Susan, was that foster parent ever prosecuted?
No, it was a medical foster home, and they wanted to investigate the child, and we said, no, you're not going to put this child through this. Why don't you investigate the children in the home? And they came back to us and said that they had all died.
They had all died?
Yes.
What?
The children?
Yes.
Did they poison them?
I don't know what happened to them. I was just like, okay, so the kids are gone and they've died. So why are they not? Does that not alarm you? But it was a medical foster home, so I don't know. We never got that question answered.
Well, I will tell you, Susan, the foster mother who took care of me is still a foster mother, and she actually was a nurse at the NICU, and she took home the most fragile of medically fragile foster children, kids with ventilators and, you know, bizarre things going on that we have seen children die over the years, like that the numbers are staggeringly different, like we've never just woken up one day or one year and everybody was dead. There's been four probably out of, I don't know, 15 or 20 really, really sick kids that my mom has cared for over the years. So that's really alarming to me and raises my brow a bit. And they were in the Portland area?
Yes, and then after that happened, the child saw an article printed in the paper about this family and how many children had gone through their home, and he came unglued when he saw the paper because this was the same family.
Hold on.
Wow.
Caller coming in.
Well, go ahead.
Hello, caller. You're on the air. Uh-oh.
Hey, how you doing?
How are you?
All right, I'm fine.
You have a question or comment for Susan?
No, I just came on board. I'm not sure what the conversation about.
This is we're here with Susan Guerin. She's a publicist and a former child advocate. Tonight's topic is the system and how our children don't really have a lot of laws in place to protect them when they become abused or come into the system. To fill our callers, our listeners in, Susan had enlightened us to the fact that there are some places where people are using animal rights laws to fight for children. So that gives you a little bit of a update of what we're talking about tonight.
Okay.
Well, and I want to clarify that, Maria. That was during the time when this was probably in 1994.
Okay.
So to make I hope.
Okay.
I hope.
Well, let's hope that we've come a long way since then.
Right. That's how, when I got involved, I didn't realize that until the attorney came over and told me that. And they say that the children slip through the crack, which that is a term that I don't care for, because you'd be surprised at how many children slip through the cracks.
And we have a question. We have a comment in our chat room from Storm Love. Storm Love writes, good evening. The question that I have is, how can the state take a child away from a parent or parents, turn them over to foster care, and then the child gets molested or dies? That sounds crazy.
It is crazy. It is crazy. I've had, there were a caseworker that was supposed to supervise a visit, and the caseworker did not, and the mother, there's a reason why they have supervised visits. The caseworker was sitting in the car reading the paper, and the mother took the child and killed the child.
I remember that story. Didn't she strangle him with a shoestring?
That I don't remember. What I recall the story is that the mother was at the park, and the caseworker was sitting in the car.
Reading newspaper, yeah.
Uh-huh. And I've had where the mother was supposed to be supervising the child, came back and said that there was no supervision, that the caseworker had left. So we ended up having to pay an independent person to watch the child when the child was with the mother.
Well, I guess, you know, you said that initially this happened in, your situation happened in 95 or so, the early to mid-90s. The sad part is, right here in 2010, we still have these children that are going into foster care that are still dying and being molested or whatever. And I guess my question is still, where are those laws to, you know, I guess I'd have to do my own research, and I guess in whatever state you're from, for our callers, you can do your own research in your state. It's no different than the woman here who had the children who had killed them and kept them in the freezer just to get their checks every month, you know, and I don't know. I guess my question is, I know they say that people have a right to due process, but to drag out the system and use tax dollars for people who are pretty much guilty of sin is beyond me. You know, I think that sometimes we can model after some other countries who we consider barbaric, but no one considers the act that they did to these children as barbaric, obviously, because, you know, what they did was equally barbaric. And I guess even now I'm not sure that personally I would understand why these people would be giving such respect when they totally disrespected these children. And, I mean, to the point of death in some cases.
Yes, it doesn't. It's one, people don't want to know. We did a We did this thing when I had the actual books that had the stats for the state that year, and that was the year that 34 children died. And people would come up and say, "Oh, what's your booth about?" And I said, "Well, did you know that 34 children died last year?" The wall comes down and they leave because they don't want to know, because it's uncomfortable for them. And that's what we have to talk about, the things that are uncomfortable. And the only way abuse stops is by talking about it. It's very scary. It's hard to talk about. People don't want to know. And then when it happens, then they really don't know where to start or where to go or to get help or will someone believe them. You know, there's so much going on. It's just like with what's gone on with the Catholic Church, and it's not just the Catholic Church. It's going on everywhere. And we just got the stats for Salt Lake City, and Utah's sexual assault rate outpaces the U.S. average by 10%. That's huge. That's huge. Any abuse is huge, but when you're talking those numbers, what's going on, you know, what is going on? And it's because people don't want to talk about it. And that's of reported. And I know this is an uncomfortable subject. People don't want to hear about it, but we need to pay attention because it could be your daughter, your son, and these perpetrators that say admit to, that they've molested or whatever they have done to them, they admit maybe to 40. There's more than 40.
Yeah.
It's like, "I had one or two beers, your officer." You know, they'll admit to the lesser of the evil. Well, 40 is a lot. I don't know how you would remember 40. And if they're admitting to those numbers, you can imagine those numbers are lower.
Wow. I do. So,
isn't it true? I've heard statistics, and I've heard it said that offenders typically offend 300 to 400 victims in their career of being a sexual predator.
That I don't know. I know of one particular case where the guy lived next to their house, butted up to a schoolyard.
Well, here's my story. I was one of 6 children to be taken away in the state of Oregon. I was the child born of 2 very mentally ill parents, and my father had been sexually abusing my sister, who has Down syndrome, and I, well, let's see, the boys were, all their rights were terminated, and they were adopted away. They were gone adopted before my sister and I were born, and it took them 8.5 years to take me away after they had already terminated their rights. And then I was only taken away because my sister was displaying, pardon me, acts of sexual abuse at school. And it then took them another 4.5 months to remove me after she was taken away. So, and this was after multiple allegations again. The state of Oregon, I don't know.
Well, you sound like the case that I'm talking about.
I know, you also described that too.
Yes, because the child was removed when the state went in to remove the developmentally delayed daughter because the father was sexually abusing her.
Right.
And they found this boy that the birth mother had given. It was an illegal adoption. The birth mother had given this child
to this. To who? My mom did this. To who?
I know the name, but I don't know that we want to say it over the air. If you want to talk to me later, this would be, like, really bizarre if this is the same case I'm talking about. And there were 6 children.
4 boys and 2 girls?
That, I don't know. I don't know. There were 6 children. That has been verified by the caseworker who went in to remove the developmentally delayed girl. And because of the sexual abuse by her biological father, and they found this young boy, who is the boy that I ended up advocating for. And I had read about this. And years later, it was slipped out that the caseworker said that the older brother wanted to find his sibling because of the laws in Oregon. You can now, at age 18, find your siblings. They'll open the adoption papers. And he slipped with a name.
Bizarre.
And I... Pardon?
I said, that's really bizarre. My brother did that to me, to my sister and I.
Well, you and I need to talk afterwards.
No, I'm crazy.
You two need to talk all day about this.
Yeah, I think we do, because this could be possible. It's just very interesting. I think we should talk off air afterwards. And this is Rebecca?
Yes.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And even in the event that it's not the same case, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's just amazing that it can happen.
Twice,
you know,
I know.
Yeah, the story is so, yeah. And they're supposed to, from what I understand, is they're supposed to federally have a permanent plan within 18 months for each child that's in the system. What happens is they move the child, the 18-month clock starts ticking all over again, and that's why these children languish in the system for so long, because they get federal dollars.
Huh.
And the year I was testifying down in Salem, they were asking for more premiums. They were asking for more money, like millions. I can't remember how many millions at this date. And the only reason they would need more money for insurance premiums is because they're expecting more claims.
Hmm.
There was so much stuff that went on that I knew about that, you know, yeah, it was just amazing.
There's stuff right now that I'm not going to list the official name of the center, but it's like it's a place where severely abused children go, and there's on-site help. Anyway, big old system. Well, I know somebody who is in the process of... And they're saying to this person that, no, we can't diagnose attachment disorder anymore to any children because the state won't allow it. So this is limiting the diagnoses for the children so they don't have to cough up that extra money to pay for that treatment. In which, in every single case, every single child that goes into the hands of the state, they do have attachment disorder because they were ripped away from their parents, good or not. It's very traumatic for children. And I'm just taken aback by all the things that continue to go on, and they continue to reduce the foster parents' wages when the foster parents aren't getting paid very much anyway. I guess, you know, you can make a lot of money and it can be a decent living, but you still have to put it all back into the children, and that's what they do.
Like, mm-hmm. We have quite a few callers on the line. Hold on.
Anyhow, so I'm just really amazed at what the state can get away with.
Well, it's because the citizens aren't paying attention, and they're not going and beating down the doors down in the Capitol. And when I went down, I got yelled at.
Okay, we have a caller on the line. Good evening, caller from area code 718. Are you there?
I'm here.
Hello, you have a comment or question for Susan? And welcome to our show.
Oh, thank you. What is the name of your show?
Healing Through Hurt Talk Radio.
Healing Through Hurt. I like that. And what does Susan do? Like, is she a therapist or her life experiences?
She's a former child advocate.
Oh, okay. Hello, Susan. And,
hello.
My name is Tracy.
Hi, Tracy.
And I'm 45. And just a few minutes before I called this show, I was in my kitchen, and I was saying to myself, how do you heal from a childhood where you felt unwanted and unloved? But I know that I was. So how do I heal from it? I know that it's possible, but I feel like there's one last area, because I do go to therapy, and I do understand the childhoods of my parents. But there's still that part, like, how do you get through the hurt?
Wow, I think it's a different journey for each person on how they cope with, one is realizing what happened, and I'm not a therapist, I'm making the disclaimer right here.
Right, right.
I've just, you know, it's just looking out there, and there's going to be different things that work for different people, and being willing to say, oop, this one doesn't work for me, I'm going
right.
to keep looking. And it's, I know myself, is through prayer, education, and understanding what happened.
All of the above I've done. In fact, I'm sitting in my den, and I have a good 200 books, and maybe 10 are novels, but the majority of them are about finding out who I am and who I am not, because being a little girl, and my parents divorced when I was a little girl, so when I would see my father, he would say, you know, what is she doing? It was just, like, in hindsight, I'm like, wow, at least I know now why I was a little screwy. When before I said, why can't I be like other people? Why can't I this? Why can't I that? This is like the first time in my life where I'm like, I'm happy to be me. And I'm very fortunate. I'm very fortunate that I had a mother and father. There are a lot of people that I know that didn't know their parents. And I'm sorting through what to be appreciative of. And how the second part is when I talk to my parents now, great example, my mother called yesterday, and thank God for call ID. So I said to my daughter, pick up the phone, I'm not home. And I did that because my mother has two masters. She's retired, she's traveled the world, all that great stuff, but the hurt little girl wants to hurt whoever's in earshot. And so I have to make sure that I'm not in earshot. And the last time we spoke, she said something to me that was completely inappropriate. And before I would have fell apart, instead I said something back to her, equally cold. And I don't want to live like that with anybody, you know. So I made a decision. She's not viable. I'll talk to her like every other month. Because when I do that, then she's happy to hear from me because she hasn't heard from me.
Right.
So it's something where I feel like instead of being in bullseye, like take myself out of the target and understanding, Susan, it's not personal. It's not me. And this is the first time in my life that I realized that it's not me. I didn't do anything that would warrant someone saying that to me. So you're right about the different paths and prayer, meditation. I just started journaling.
Uh-huh.
I just started journaling, and that has been very helpful for me. And having good friends has been, I think, a godsend, you know?
Yes, so, journaling has been great for me. Exercise is another thing. Doing self-care.
Yeah.
You know, hey, I think I need to go have a pedicure.
something is really, I thought it would be selfish, but it's not.
Mm-mm.
I feel so much better after I do it. Yesterday I started my workout regimen, and I sort of procrastinated, and then I said, you get up and just do it. So when I got up and I started doing it, I don't know, halfway through, the endorphins started kicking in, and I started saying, I'm so glad I did this. And then when I finished, I made a great protein shake, and I felt clarity. I said, Tracy, it's time to get back to the things you used to do that you loved, and stop waiting for mom and dad to say, what am I doing? You know, they may never do that.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't mean that they don't love me and that they don't care about me, but what they have is what they're giving me. And it's time for me to accept that.
Yes.
May I ask you this?
I'm sorry, you sort of broke up. Please say that again.
Have you learned how to break that vicious cycle? In other words, Do you have children of your own?
I have two children, and I had my first child at the ripe old age of 16, and I treated him poorly. And when, not completely, but I saw what I did, and I said to him, he's 29, and I said to him, I want to say 5 years ago, it was Mother's Day, and I said to myself, I don't expect him to call, and I don't blame him. And he called. He called that night, and I said to him, what I just said, and I said, we could talk about anything. I made a lot of mistakes with you, and I do apologize, and we could talk about anything. You could talk about what I've done wrong, anything. And we started a dialogue, and I could say for 2 years we really talked to the point where he said, Ma, you should have beat me that time. Because I kept saying, I was wrong for doing that. He said, no, Ma, I have to tell you, I was wrong. It got to the point where I just kept confessing and confessing because I don't want to continue this. And I have a 19-year-old daughter, and I've made mistakes with her as well, but I'm a lot better. Mm-hmm. And realizing that I made these mistakes and also forgiving myself, that's a biggie. You know, I made those same mistakes, but then I said, Tracy, think of it like this. You were raised speaking Greek, and then you had to learn how to speak Spanish. So, you know, give yourself a break. But the self-forgiveness is an issue, but I'm working on it every day.
Right.
My son and daughter, I know that they know that I love them and that I care about them, and I do my best. I do my best not to over-give advice, and at the same time to let them know that I'm here for them, and at the same time to say that you're not going to browbeat me for things that I made mistakes for. I'm not the same person anymore. And, you know, they don't have to forgive me. I'm finally forgiving me.
You know, exactly.
I said to my son, let me tell you something. Mike Tyson had nothing on me. I could beat myself so bad. It was terrible. And it took a lot of time, but I don't do those things anymore to myself or to other people. And I have a great name for myself. I call myself Water Lily. And when I'm feeling kind of scared or whatever, I talk to myself and ask myself, why am I feeling this way? Because if I don't do it, repeat it, you know, the person I used to be, and I don't want to do that anymore.
Right.
You know, real friends don't do that to themselves, you know.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people have not come to that realization that you have come to. Many make up a lot of excuses why they will not move forward to that conclusion. You were asking how people get over certain things. For me,
mm-hmm.
The creation of this program and this show.
Really? Really?
And listening to everyone else.
Isn't that
have
something?
People in my corner.
I'm about to cry.
and Cheryl. And Autumn and our panel, our list of regular panels that
mm-hmm.
calls in. These are the people that help me to heal through my hurt.
Right.
You know, this show, I knew that when the concept was first there, it had mm-hmm. come together. I had the concept, I had the show for a year.
Uh-huh.
When I had spoken to an old associate of mine, she had an idea for one thing, and I told her my idea, and the first group, or I guess the first generation of us had come together, and I said, well, I have a radio show. Let's do this and hit the ground running. Rebecca had come on board, maybe week two or so. I thought that she was a great young lady, and each one of us
mm-hmm.
represents a different generation. We're basically all 10 years apart.
Perfect.
So
it's like the stair step.
Yeah, exactly. And we've gone through so much between myself
mm-hmm.
and the co-host that
yeah.
you know, we're not therapists, we're not doctors, and I happen to like that because
we're real people.
Absolutely, and it's not, this is not Freudian here. This is not Dr. Jung. This is about more. And I gotta just say something to you. I felt for all my life mostly that other people had it going on. When I would see someone with a house, white picket fence, 2.5 house, children, and a dog, I really thought that they were happy. And the more my mentor, Rose Whaley, taught me so much in 5 years' time, and one of the things she taught me was, the more you learn about yourself, the more you will learn about every human being you ever meet. So now, when I meet people, I look at their spirit, I look at their soul. I don't say, look what they're driving. I don't say, you know, this or that. And I always felt that I was the only one who was hurt in my life. And when I realized how many people are hurt, and it's not that I'm happy that anyone's hurt, no. I'm realizing that people handle it in different ways. And that actually sometimes we are supposed to be hurt so that we can learn from them. What's that saying? Like, you learn in the valley, right? You learn when things are going wrong. Well, at least that's the hope.
Yeah.
But this is a wonderful show, and I'm really glad that I called in, because right before I called in, like I said, I was in my kitchen, and I was saying, my daughter's selfish, and I don't know what to do. And then I said, I can't do anything. That's an inside job. And I just said, you know what, and then the second thing was, how do I get through, like, that last, I feel like it's a last piece. Like, I've gone through so much. Even when I talk to my mother now, I remember she said to me, I was a bad kid. Because I was confronting her on some issues, and she yelled, you are a bad kid. And I'll never forget it, because that was a turning point for me and for her. I said, I was a little girl left to my own devices. And that's when she sat back, and like one tear rolled down her cheek, and the sun was setting. And the sun, ray, went through her tear. And
wow.
That was the first time I knew, for the first time in my life, what the word compassion meant. I literally felt my mother's pain. I literally felt it in that instant. And it still amazes me. Like I said to her before, you have a wonderful daughter. Two wonderful daughters. But it doesn't matter if they are not where they are, right?
Right.
And that's where I'm at right now in my life, understanding that and not personalizing it. What is your name again?
Me?
Yes.
I'm Malia.
Malia, thank you so much. I don't want to take up your whole show.
Oh, feel free. Let's see. Oh, you're welcome. This is what this show was created for you.
Yeah.
For our listeners, again, our number is 646-478-4726. And I don't know, you know, if you want to share how you found us, that would be great.
I could tell you, a wonderful woman told me about what she was doing, I want to say a month ago, and we were sort of playing phone tag. Her name is Cheryl. And,
okay.
And
she's here.
Is she? And she said...
Oh, you know what? Let me see. Hold on a moment. Cheryl?
I'm here.
There she is.
Hi, Cheryl.
Autumn's in the chat room as well, Maria, I think.
I wasn't sure. Well, Cheryl, this wonderful woman, I met her when I was 25. I'm now 45. And I fell in love with her. And we've been friends.
There you go.
Yeah, and she was the first woman I can say that ever hugged me, and in my mind I said, is she a lesbian? Because my family wasn't affectionate in any way.
Right.
So when she hugged, she gave me a big bear hug, and I was like, what? But I became a puppy because I was following her all over. And she's a wonderful person. I'm very grateful to know her.
I'd just like to say to you, Tracy, was that your name, Tracy?
Yes, Tracy.
Yeah, we're all here today. All of my co-hosts are on board tonight. Autumn Williams, Rebecca East, Cheryl Carr is here, and myself, and I'm Maria Wall. And together we have worked towards the show for you and Susan and all of our listeners. Again, our number is 646-478-4726. Give us a call. Tell us your story. Give us your comments. You know, I want to thank you so much, Tracy, for calling in tonight. And we're here every Saturday night.
Well, I'm going to be checking you guys out, but I'm not going to say anything because I like to talk. But tonight you guys have helped me immensely.
Thank you. I'm so glad.
And have a wonderful rest of your night. And, Cheryl, I love you. And thank you all. Have a great night.
Thank you. You as well. You have a good night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks. You know, again, that's what this show is all about. And when we get callers like that, you know, that lets me know that, you know, our we're accomplishing our mission. And, you know, Susan, just the sheer fact that you've opened up a lot of eyes tonight alone to even more issues, and then to let our listeners know that there's still a lot of hurt out there that needs to be healed. You know, that's what this is all about. And we, each of us now, you know, we know now that our voice is getting out there and people are calling in and they are finding their voices. And I know Susan, are you still with us?
Yes.
Yeah, I know that when we had conversed a while ago, one of the things that you had said that stuck in my mind, of course, to this day, is the fact that you had thought about it, and one of the reasons why you had, an additional reason, I guess, why you had become a child advocate was because you hadn't found your own personal voice yet.
Right. It was much easier to fight and be someone else's voice than it was to be my own.
And for me,
that was one of the turning points for me, because I think, and I always tell Rebecca and Autumn and Cheryl that Rebecca mostly, because we talk a lot on the phone during our spare time, that I think I'm here not to talk about my personal problems. I think I did one show about me, and the other shows are about helping other people, because I do have a voice, but I choose to keep my voice to myself for now, because I know that I believe that I was born to this earth to help other people, and I've done that probably my entire life in one form or another. So, you know, I just, you know, I don't know if you want to elaborate further on the voice that you didn't have for yourself, but when you said that, it stuck with me because I could really relate to it.
Well, it was difficult to say those words out loud for the first time, and it was someone else who actually was asking questions, and when I replied to their question, that they were telling me that's sexual abuse, that's emotional abuse, that's spiritual abuse, that, and it was actually to say the words, you know, that I was raped was very, you know, I couldn't say it without bursting into tears. And I can now talk about it the majority of the time without bursting into tears. So it's really hard to say those words, and you're holding them, and partly it was someone else who helped me recognize, you know it, but to say it out loud is really difficult. It is really difficult to say that you were raped, and I was sexually assaulted by my husband, which a lot of women think that that cannot happen. And I'm here to tell you it can. And it is sexual assault, and it's a crime. And a lot of women think that if they're in an intimate relationship with a partner, be it husband or boyfriend, or they're dating, that it can't be rape, and it is. So that was one thing I would like to, that I wanted to share, is that women don't realize that. And I knew it was rape at the time, but then he would buy gifts, and I know that this happens. And so what would happen, it was the conflicting message I was getting was, well, maybe it really wasn't rape because he bought me something. But what I was doing is messing with my head, and what they're doing is not wanting to get caught. And they're wanting to keep you silent, and you're not recognizing that, and it's what I call the crazy making.
Right.
And then they'll tell you you're crazy. If you went and said those words, you know that they're going to say you're crazy. Well, that's the number one sign of an abuser. Number one.
Wow, yeah. I've come to know that in my own personal experience that I'm going through is it's amazing how they will try to turn things around
mm-hmm.
and make you think that it's you
mm-hmm.
and not them. And I'm glad that you brought up that subject of being in not just a relationship but a marriage, and mm-hmm. it's still considered rape. We had a case here maybe about a month and a half or so ago where a woman, he was a police officer, and he sexually assaulted his wife. And they came in and they took him and they actually arrested him. Hold on, we have another caller coming on the line.
Good evening,
caller.
Caller from area code 585, are you there?
Oh, hi, hello. I'm sorry, I was just finished pumping my gas. I'm on my way to work.
Oh.
Sorry, how you doing?
I'm good, how are you? We're good, actually.
Welcome to the show. You have a
question, a comment for Susan?
Well, you know what? I was trying to find out what the topic is tonight. I don't have internet, so I can't go online to check it. And I've been rushing getting myself together to go to work, so I figured I'd call and try to get a gist of what the show is about this evening. So if you could give me a heads up on what it's about, I may well have a comment.
Well, tonight our special guest is Susan Guerin. She's a former child advocate and publicist. She's been sharing with us some of the issues that she has witnessed and experienced with child advocacy over the years since the early to mid-90s, until she retired from the profession. She also shared with us why she got into it, which was because she had not found her own personal voice to fight for herself, so she decided to fight for the young people. But if you're just coming on, Susan had just shared with us that she herself was raped by her husband.
Okay.
It's a topic that most people don't realize, that even though you're in a committed relationship or a legal marriage, rape is still rape.
No still means no.
It still means no. And
That's right. No is no. It doesn't matter if you got a wedding band or you don't have a wedding band. No is still no at the end of the day. And if men had to experience the things that they put women through, as far as just taking what they want, then they'd have a whole new perspective on what's going on that has been going on for years and years and years. And it's like it's so, and even today, it's still like it's okay. You know, people don't want to talk about it. They act like it doesn't happen. Oh, things are getting better. No, things are not getting better. Here in Rochester, New York, a woman just got killed, I want to say, beaten up and raped by her husband repeatedly. They had an up-and-down relationship, people said. You know, but the bottom line is, you don't take a gun and put it to the head of your spouse and say, boom, pull the trigger, because you can't get what you want. At the end of the day, it's all a crime, and people have been going through it since the beginning of time, and one day it will stop, and if we don't speak out on it, it's never going to have a voice, if we don't give it a voice.
Exactly. And, you know, I find it so amazing how many people show up after the fact. And when you know, my question is still, why didn't you say something beforehand?
Well, you know what? I'm going to tell you something. As a person who has been abused, I've been in an abusive relationship twice in my life, once in my marriage, and in a relationship I was in after my marriage, I'm going to tell you that what people don't seem to understand, if you have never lived the fear, then you have no idea. If you have never lived the fear, you have no idea. When you don't know that when you come home from work, if you look the wrong way, you're going to get your ass kicked. And then you got to put out afterwards. You got to have sex with them for the privilege of getting your ass kicked, point blank and simple. Or maybe you didn't wash the kitchen floor good enough, so there's an ass kicking, and now put out. You know what I'm saying? You still got to lay there and gap your legs and let him do whatever he wants to do and then say, okay, honey, have a good night. But then if something happens and heaven forbid you die or he kills you accidentally, you know what I'm saying? Then people say, oh, yeah, it's such a shit. Well, she should have did this. But you know what? It's living the fear. And because I'm a person who has lived the fear, there is nothing like it. There is nothing like it. It's inexplainable. The fear is unsurmountable. You can't, it's like you're constantly walking on eggshells and you never know what you're going to do to trigger that son of a bitch.
Nice.
And you know what? And the bad part about it is, guess what? There's men going through the same damn thing. There are men out there who are going through the same thing. It's not only women who are going through it. There are men who don't hit women. But there's a whole lot of women that also hit men. Hitting regardless, it's all of it is wrong.
Yep, it's all wrong, every last bit of it. And, you know,
it's still going to be what it is. A lot more people are dying. Now all of a sudden my city wants to get the police commissioner wants to have advocacy board for abuse. Oh, it took how many women to get killed? How many men to get killed before now you want to do something about it? Now it's a problem? It's been a problem. Wake up, Snuggie. It ain't just started. This isn't a problem that just went on. This is a problem that's been ongoing since the beginning of time.
That's true.
But the bottom line, the way we stop it is to raise our children not to accept it, to raise our children to recognize what it is. And when you get, I call it a niggling in the brain. When you get that little niggling in your brain, you with somebody and they say, and your brain tell you, that ain't right. And you say, oh, no, it wasn't that. And you keep it moving. No, when you get that little, oh, no, that ain't right, you listen to that, oh, no, it ain't right, and you keep it moving, and you get the F on up out of there is what you do. But if parents would raise their children to respect one another and know that once you get a person, that person is already raised, if you ain't satisfied with the way that person is, leave them alone and find somebody you're going to be satisfied with. It's not your job to re-raise them, and it's not your job to beat them into subserviency. That's not your job. If you don't like the way they act, leave them and get somebody else. Because regardless of what, you don't love that person. When you got to force somebody to have sex with you, you don't love that person. That's abuse.
Oh yeah.
And you hit on so many topics today.
I don't even know where to begin, but the gentleman that happened to you as well. And as quiet as we do.
Maria, can you hear me?
Yes.
Maria, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, great. That is my cousin Isabel that is talking, and she was in a relationship with a gentleman that had become so very abusive to her, so she had got the signal that she didn't recognize herself anymore, and I begged and I pleaded and pleaded with her until she finally got up enough strength to pack her things and come with her children and come to me. We were talking the other day about it, and she got very emotional, and she broke down, and she cried. She came to me with just herself and her children and the clothes on her back, and I just had a small two-bedroom apartment, but we had between us 9 children, and me and her, and nobody's working, nobody had jobs, but we managed to clothe those children, feed them, and I did what I could to assist her, and in her own words, she said that I gave her back her self-esteem, and I gave her back her sense of self, and helped her to get on her feet and get herself back to where she could stand up and go out there and make her way and find herself a place. The young lady who called before was a very good friend of mine, Tracy, and when I first her, she just was so very, very sad. She just was so sad, and I did hug her. I looked at her, and I was like, oh, my God, she needs a hug. I have to hug her. I just have to hug her, and I did, and she's been following me around for the last 20-some years. I've done what I can in my lifetime to assist those that I could assist. I know what it is about marital rape, only I didn't get dicked afterwards. There was just more abuse. So I do understand about all of that. I understand what it is about childhood rape and molestation and all of that. And when I could not speak for myself, when I became a mother, I was able to speak for and to defend my children and all those many other people that came onto my path or I came into their path. I was able to stand and speak to them. The young man that called earlier was my son, my youngest son. And I just want to say to my cousin, my girlfriend, and my son so far, thank you, God, for your support. Thank you. I sent emails out to everybody. I called them up. I'm not going to say I threatened them, but I asked them kindly to please support me. And I just want to tell you guys, thank you so much.
Thank
for
you.
Supporting.
Thank you, Bill.
They stood up today. They stood up today, and I thank them for what they did. Thank you so much, guys. My son was so cute. He's like, I don't know what it's about, but I'm calling.
But
I'm like, listen to my baby.
But, you know, I do want to thank our callers tonight, because without you calling in and supporting us and telling your story, we wouldn't be able to survive and to help other people. It takes the Susans of the world and the Rebeccas and the Autumns and the Sheryls and the Tracys and family and friends to support us, to help us to keep moving forward. Because, you know, some people are listening, and they may think, well, these women are strong and they have it together. There are nights when I sit in a corner by myself and cower and ball up in that little ball and I cry.
Thanks.
Because,
yeah,
you know, I'm still human and I have a lot on my plate.
Oh, I have. I'd also like to say that my friend Tracy, don't let her fool you. She has her own talk show, a TV talk show in New York. She has a talk show that she has in New York. And it's called Just Ask Tracy. And she's an advice talk show host. So don't let her fool you. She's an advice talk show host.
You know, you brought up a great point.
Because we are.
We're business owners, independent contractors, and we're educated women,
and
we still hurt.
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do. Well, ladies, I'm going to say goodnight. I am at work, and I have to put the phone away.
Well, thank you so much for calling and visit us again. Next week is going to be a great show.
Well, I'll call back again. Hopefully I will be on my way to work.
Thank you.
All right, have a blessed day.
I love you, Carol.
Goodbye.
Okay. That's what we need, is to have people call in and hear our stories and hear other people's stories to keep us moving forward. But back to you, Susan, how did you move past that?
Well, I prayed a lot. I spent a lot of time in prayer. I exercised. I read a lot. My mantra was be still and know that I am God. And I sought out different programs. One of them was called Celebrate Recovery, which is a faith-based Bible 12-step program. And it can be for if you have alcohol abuse or drugs or a survivor of rape and that sort of thing. So that's one of, and then ARMS, which was an abuse recovery group, which is also faith-based. I just dug in. I went through domestic violence, and then I did several months of that. And then when I was done with that, I ended up going into a sexual assault group. So I sought out. I was like reading, you know, pulling all sorts of information and checking out things that worked for me. That's what I did for about 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, and prayer. There were times I was yelling at the guy upstairs when things were going on. And the other thing is that has happened through this is that I started praying for my abuser. And it's really hard to be mad when you're praying for someone. It took time. It didn't happen overnight, trust me. There were times I was yelling the prayers. But now at this point, I don't have that. I found out who Susan is. I had forgotten who she is. I take care of Susan. And that, if I don't take care of me, who is going to take care of me? If I don't value myself enough to take care of myself, then who is going to do that for me? And so that is, and learning that I am of value, that I am okay, and that I like who I am. And I know what happened to me. There are people that don't believe it. They think I've made it up, but they weren't there. And I actually tracked down the two wives that he was married to before that.
Wow.
And they confirmed the second wife was very forthcoming. So I already knew what I knew.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to me did happen to me. But the other blessing in that is that the second wife confirmed what I already knew.
Mm-hmm.
So that was very helpful. So all of the combinations of I don't even look the same person. People that see pictures of me, I don't even look like the same person at all. I actually look better because I'm no longer there. And I just celebrated 7 years. I walked away April 12th, seven years ago, and I call it Freedom Day.
Good for you.
It's Freedom Day to me, and I celebrate the fact that I'm free because I personally feel like I've been let out of prison. And if you saw my pictures, they would be very telling because I had to introduce myself to people that knew me during that time and they didn't know who I was. They were shocked. I look better. I look younger. I feel better. I'm stronger. All of those things. But it was hard work.
Right.
And you're going to have to get real and do the work to get back to who you were meant to be.
Exactly. And
I think you made a very good point when you said that your day of freedom,
because so many women won't walk away, and they'll make excuses why they have to stay.
whether it be the children. Well, the children, you know, it'll hurt the children. Children are very resilient, and they're going to bounce back regardless. In most cases, maybe not all, but, you know, sometimes there are some adverse effects, but children, sometimes they're too young to really realize what's going on, and then they'll forget about it, even if they did for 1 minute. And other times, you know, we have to know when it's time to let go and walk away. Mm-hmm. You know, the hardest thing for me, for those of you who do not know my full story, is that when I found out that my husband had slept with a neighbor, then my world fell apart. I let him back in at one point when financially everything had fallen apart for me, but things never got better. So it was January 6th of this year that I actually filed for my divorce on grounds of adultery once I had enough evidence to go after him and his lover. You know, my attorney is working with me, and you know, things aren't progressing as quickly as I'd like, but I do know that there is light at the end of even my tunnel. And, you know, some people are like, well, why don't you go try to work it out? Because I'm like, would you try to work it out? You know, and it's just not any one particular thing. It's more to it than that. But I know that it's my time to keep putting one foot in front of the other and walking away. And it's a slow process, but I'm doing it. And each day I know that I'm one step closer to waking up and feeling the warmth of the sun on my face again, and knowing that when I smile that it's genuine and not just a facade. So I think that that's one thing that so many people need to do, is to gain that strength to know when to walk away and just do it and not look back, because there's nothing behind you but that hurt, heartache, and pain. So, and tomorrow, you know, could be the best day of your life. So you always have that positive thing to look forward to. So, you know, I'm glad that you did come on and tell your story, because in many ways I can relate to what you've been through. And
yeah, I walked out with nothing. I walked out with my car keys, my purse, and the clothes on my back. And I actually found myself laughing at times, even though the situations that I was in, I had to sleep in my car at one point, which it was much better. It was much better than being there. And that's why I do. I call it Freedom Day.
Yeah. Hey, Cheryl, I think you can relate to some of this, too.
Oh, yes. Well, I've walked away. I had children. I took my children and the clothes on out back, and I just kept walking. I just walked, left everything. I mean, house full of furniture, just walked away. I just took my children and walked away. I just walked away. You're going to need me. You're going to want it. And no. I just walked away. I walked away. Funny, because he filed for divorce. Years later, he filed for divorce because he found somebody that thought he was fantastic, and he wanted to get married, so he had to divorce me first, and he filed for the divorce, and it was like kismet, because the divorce became final on the exact same day we got married. I'm like, that ain't nothing but God. That ain't nothing but God. I celebrated. I had Freedom Day, Susan. You're not even kidding. We had champagne. Me and my cousin, my family, I had champagne. We celebrated. Yes! Free at last. Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Just walk away, those are things. I sent Maria an email the other day. They're just things. You can get those things again. You can rebuild. You already know how to do it, so it's not going to be like you started from scratch. You already know how to do it, so That's small stuff. That's the small stuff. You leave, you get out, you get yourself respect back, you get yourself esteem back, and you start over. That was mm-hmm. practice. That was your first act. That's your first act. That's the first act of the play. Now you go on to the second act of the play. Go on to the next act. So move on. As you get over that, you're going to get over it, you're going to look back and you go, ooh, I had insanity. I was insane. I'm much better now. Believe me, you are. Believe me, you are. Mm-hmm. You're going to look back and be laughing at you.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that day. And maybe we can have that party that day for me.
Oh, yes.
It will come. It will come. You will enjoy the simple things of life, and it may be a cup of coffee or watching the squirrels run up the trees or getting a walk in and just enjoying it. It, you know, it's just the simple stuff, and she's right. It is just stuff. And I found that
I
didn't want the stuff that we had had together.
No, no, no. You don't want it. You don't want it. Because all that other stuff comes with it. No, I don't want it. Give me my freedom. I don't want the name. I don't want any of it. I walk away with nothing. I walk away with nothing. Children in hand. And that was it. I took my babies and I walked away. I took my babies and I planned my escape for months. We came home. We were in Germany and we came home for Christmas vacation. But what he didn't know is I was mailing. Every time he left for work, I mailed a box home. The children's clothes and stuff, I mailed their things home to my mother. We came home for vacation and I didn't have to go back. He dropped me off the day we arrived, 29 days later. At night, calls up, I'll be picking you up and such. No, you won't. Well, we have to go back. No, we don't have to do anything. I'm not in the Army. I don't have to report anywhere. Well, I'm going to do this. No, you can do whatever the hell you want to do. I'm not going anywhere. And guess what? You cannot make me. You cannot force me to do anything. We're not overseas anymore. You cannot force me to do a damn thing. You can't make me. And I'm laughing. I was because he couldn't do nothing about it. I'm not in a foreign land where you're in charge, you're the boss, and whatever you say goes, and I don't have no words, I don't have no voice, I don't. You cannot make me do a damn thing. You can't force me to do a damn thing. You can't make me. I laugh my ass. And of course, his recourse is not to send me any money. Okay, don't send me money. I'm an excellent letter writer. I was sending his commanding officer a letter. He's not supporting me. He's not sending me any money. We don't have food. We don't have clothing. And I don't have any place to live. They made him send me money direct out of his check to me. Like, he doesn't have to send it to me. The Army's going to send it to me. I was sitting funny. I didn't have to do a thing. I didn't have to do a thing. I took classes and learned how to be an emergency medical technician. I went from there to being a paramedic. I could take care of my family by myself. I didn't need him. He wasn't doing anything anyway. He never did anything. I had to do it all myself by packing groceries for tips. Bagging groceries for tips. Okay? I made pretty good money at it, but I had to work for tips. No, I don't have to do that anymore. I don't have to do that anymore.
Okay.
And I'm, look, everything's fine. My baby's all. Everything's fine.
I'm going to, we have about a minute left on our live show, and then we go into our after show. We invite you all to stay around for our after show. Again, next week, our special guest will be Susanna Barlow, the author of the memoirs, What Peace There May Be, and Susanna. Actually, Susan is Susanna's publicist. So join us next week right here, same time, 11 p.m. Eastern Time, 9 p.m. Mountain, and 8 Pacific. Susan, if you'd like, you have about 53 seconds in our on-air show before we go into our after show. So you can tell us a little bit about Susanna. And, of course, I'm Maria Wall for Rebecca East, Cheryl Carr, and Autumn Coleman, who we lost our connection. We'll see you back next week. So, Susan, about 32 seconds to tell us a little bit about Susanna for next week's show.
Susanna Barlow is an amazing lady. She has written this book about her being the middle child, 23rd of 46, born into a polygamous sect living in the heart of Salt Lake City. And if you want to look up her website, it's susannabarlow.com. There are pictures, and she blogs, and a YouTube trailer, book trailer video.
Thank you so much. We're going into our after show now.
Okay.
People will be able to hear the full show, actually, when it archives. This is the time when we go into our wind-down mode, so to speak.
Okay.
we try to, because this has been a very charged show this week. Wow, you know, and I think that next week is going to be equally, actually, you know, each week tends to get better and better. And
mm-hmm.
Susan, oh gosh, we'd love to have you call in and join us as often as you like. You know, diverse bunch. And like I said, we bring so much personal experience to the table. And our stories are helping other people.
Well, it helps to let people know that they, what they have experienced, they are not the only ones that have experienced it. And sometimes they haven't put a voice yet to it. And that's why I appreciate Susanna so much, is because she's been the voice for what has happened growing up in her family. So.
Yeah.
And then I want, you can give Rebecca East my phone number.
Okay.
And she can chat, because I'd like to chat with her, because this would be really interesting to find
really?
Out if this is the same case.
I'm curious to know myself, so.
I know. I can tell her the name of the father, but I didn't want to say it over the air.
Well, we're still on air, so.
Yeah, I don't want to say it over
talk.
The air.
Yeah. Yeah, you two can talk. Rebecca, are you still there?
I'm here. Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, you two. Yeah, I'd love to know if by some interesting twist of fate that it's either the same, or it does allow our listeners to know how many people share similar and like stories, and it just lets them know that they're not alone, and we'll report on that in a coming weeks to let you know if it was indeed the same. Group of people, or whether it was a different group. But wow, it's been a show, and to listen to the passion in some of our callers' voices. You know, it's one of those nights when I feel what they felt, and you know, I was sitting over here holding back the tears because it's been a rough week for me, and then to listen to the callers and some of their stories, it's amazing. It still amazes me each and every week how many people are carrying it around, this hurt. I'll share a story with you all. It's probably for another show, for another episode, but I was talking to a good friend of mine, and male, and he was sharing one particular story with me of someone, one of his old college roommates, who was a young fella, and he was molested by his uncle. He didn't know where his aunt was when this was going on, and one of the things that he said was, his friend had told him that eventually he was repulsed by it. He felt that it was wrong. Then after a while, he just accepted it. And then in the end, he began to like it. He convinced himself to like it. I'm not too sure whether he's a gay male, whether he's an undercover male, or whether he's bisexual. But the stories that I've heard in this week alone, from people who have contacted me. And oddly enough, this week, they were all males except for one. That's an issue within itself. But there are a lot of men out there who are keeping that hurt inside, and maybe that's why some of them take it out on those that they love in one form or another. But, yeah, this week has been interesting in my personal life, but people like the fact that they can reach us, real people. And, you know, I've just taken in a lot this week. And I don't know, you get to that point where you're speechless. And this is one of those types of nights for me. Add the fact that I'm under the weather. So tonight has been a wonderful show, but it's also been one of those shows where it feels like I've taken on the weight of the world tonight, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does. And that's when you have to learn how to do the self-care and unplug from it, because it is a heavy subject to talk about. It hurts your heart to hear other people have gone through similar things, and you know, you can feel their pain because you've experienced it.
Yeah.
So you have to. There are days where that's why self-care is so important, and unplugging. And I listen to a lot of music. And that helps. All of those things that I've suggested earlier in the show is, you know, the walking, the exercise, the praying, being still, getting enough rest, eating right, all of those things, because you have to take care of yourself, because it is not, well, I say it's not for wusses. It's just,
you know,
you have to be tough, and to go into a sex offender treatment program, and the therapist is starting to tell me things, and I'm going, whoa, I just came in from the outside world. You deal with this all the time. This is everyday stuff for you. It is not everyday stuff for me. And then I would learn things that I didn't really want to know.
Right.
And by the end of the day, it's just like, wow, who's having this conversation with a male attorney or a male caseworker? And it's not that the subject is funny, but sometimes you have to laugh, because you're looking around and going, no one else is having this conversation. And, you know, I might be standing outside the courtroom and they're talking about what? And you're just like, whoa, I didn't sign on for this. You know, I didn't know that it was going to be this horrific. So,
yeah,
you have to take care of yourself, because if you're empty, and that's one thing I learned to do, if the bucket is empty, you've got to fill it back up again. And that's unplugging and taking care. I can't hardly hear you. I'm sorry.
How long were you married?
I was married to the man that raped me for over 20 years. I lasted longer than the two wives before me. And the first wife, she and I had the same anniversary date. I thought that was special.
Really?
Yeah. That was pretty funny when I found the divorce papers. And when I read the divorce papers, they actually talked about it wasn't, you know, the generic terms that they use now. And when I read it, I go, I know what this woman is talking about. I knew. And then I went looking for, I found her in Canada, and I found the other wife, and when I asked her the question, which is pretty embarrassing to ask the question to the wife, what was sex like in the marriage? I mean, my face was red, I was perspiring, I was shaking, and she answered me. And her answer was rape, and she was screaming. And I was, like, floored. I couldn't believe she said that. I had to ask her again. I said, what did you say? And she repeated it. And then she started talking about her life with him, and it was like listening about my life with him.
Oh.
And she had wanted to warn me, she said. She says, I wanted to warn you, but I didn't think you would believe me. And I may not have believed her, but I was never given that opportunity.
So did he always rape you? Was that his form of control all the time? I mean, did you ever have consensual sex with him?
Yes, I did. But there were times where I don't remember, and this is one of the things is that I don't, they have asked me the question, do you remember, are there more rapes? And I said, yes. I don't want to remember them all. And they asked me if I remember the beginning, and I say yes. And they asked me if I remember the end, and I say yes. And they go, do you remember the middle? I said no, and I still don't. I used to wake up screaming and crying and terror, and I don't do that so much anymore, which is, that's the good thing. Because I didn't like that. I didn't want to be reminded of that. But I don't, he doesn't scare me. I've run into him. He actually ran the other direction when he saw me, which was pretty cool. But I like that. And I'm like, and then what he did, which was very interesting, is he saw me, he did an about face, took off, and there was a woman in his path. He grabbed the woman and bent her over and started kissing her on the neck. And the woman is like a deer in headlights. And I'm standing there like, what am I supposed to do? That was his reaction when he saw me. But he tells everybody I'm a liar and I did this and that and the other thing, which, you know, and people... Yeah. They, you know, they're going to believe what they want to believe. And I know. I also have the other wives that told me so.
It's been a pillar of the community. And mine was a police officer. So there's no possible way this police officer could ever be a person who's breaking the law.
It's the Jekyll and Hyde. They present themselves one way to the outside world, and when they walk through the door, it is totally different.
Yeah. But you know what blew my first husband's mind? Like, he was abusive, and then this one day, something snapped in my head, and I let him attack me all the way through the kitchen where I kept all the knives razor sharp. And he bent me backwards over the counter in the kitchen, but he had my hands behind my back. But once I bent me backwards, I grabbed onto all of these knives and came up with them like, you know, I was a Ginsu warrior. And I chased him back through the apartment with these knives, and he got to the bedroom, and the knives were hitting the door like, you know how they used to have those carnival shows and the girls on the wheel, and you throw the knives and they hit the door and they go twang. And I kept him at that bedroom for over 48 hours. I would not let him out of there. But I told him, you better pee out the window, because if you come out of that room, you're a dead man. And it's just in that day that it flipped. And then I became his abuser. And I just something inside just flipped. And I'm not scared anymore. All of a sudden, I wasn't afraid anymore. And it was like, I'm just not going to take this anymore. I'm just not taking this anymore. I stopped the emotional eating. I lost the weight. I found a job. I started making money. He would never give me money to buy clothing and stuff like that, but my mom taught me how to sew when I was 13 years old. You think she had a clue? I don't know. So I made my own clothing. I made everything except shoes. I made all these clothes. I just became a whole different person. In the space of like 45 days, I recreated myself. And then he'd come and he'd look at me, and I'm like, what's the matter? Don't you love me? I'm the monster you have created. What's the problem? I was slim. I was beautiful. I was sexy. And I had a job, I had money, and people liked me. He had me so convinced that I was all of these negative things in this place where they were not speaking English, and I got a job, I bought a car, I learned to speak the language, I learned to travel around, I made friends. Forget it, it was a whole new world, and I was a whole new person, and there was no stopping me. There was simply no stopping me. And this is when I just made my plans. I'm going to escape. I'm getting out. And I'm getting my kids to safety. And that's exactly what I did. That's exactly what I did. And I think, like, even now, because my children are in their 30s now, so my daughter is the only one that still has it. I'm meant to be with my daddy. Oh, my gosh, she makes me crazy sometimes. But I told her, I'm not going to keep you, father, which I think is young, but you're not going to continue to force me to be in the same room with the person who was abusive and raped me. You're not going to force me to keep doing this. So if you're going to invite me to things and him too, then you have him and I'll just come on another day. But she continually sets me up and tells me, oh, no, he's not coming, and then he shows up. So I leave, but now it's to the point where I just don't bother to go at all. But I've told her now, she had a graduation. She's in FBI, Federal Marshal, Air Marshal now. I'm proud of her accomplishments, but I didn't go to her last graduation because I know he's going to be there. Oh, no, he's not coming, but I know he's going to be there. So he's always there for the photo op, although he's done nothing to assist her to reach her goals, although I have. So I'm not going to that. And he's always going to be there, so I don't go anymore. And now it's to the point between she and I that there's not going to be that much of a relationship between me and my daughter because she continually always chooses him, although she knows all of the abuse. But if you're going to put it where you're going to force me to choose, if I'm going to be in a relationship with you, that I have to be in it with him too, then I'm sorry, sweetheart. I choose me. I choose mm-hmm. me. I'm mm-hmm. love me, and I'm going to take care of me. Susan, do you ever have ice cream therapy? I have ice cream therapy. You know, when you talk about taking care of me, I have ice cream therapy.
I love ice cream therapy. Whatever works.
Therapy, I find that I love listening to my oldies. I love swing music. Believe it or not, I love country western music. People tease me about it, but I love country western music. But I just have to remember to turn it on. Like when I start feeling a little bad or sad or melancholy, I just have to remember to turn it on. Don't dive into it and absorb it. Just turn on the music and just bring yourself on out of it, you know, just to remember to do it. So it is about taking care of yourself and remembering to do it. And if, you know what, I'm going to be 60 soon, so for me it's all about Cheryl now. The children are all grown. Like tonight my youngest son called. He's 24 and he's out on his own and everything. So it's just me now. I've never been alone to live alone before in my entire life. This is my first time. So this is my bachelorette period.
How old did you say you were?
I'm almost 60. I'm 58 years old.
Oh, well, I've got you beat there. And so I can relate with I'm doing my bachelor pad now. I've always taken care of kids. And so, yeah, I can relate with that.
Yes. The first 4 months of it, I cried through the whole thing because I thought I was going to die. You know, there's mm-hmm. nobody. Oh, my God. It's cold turkey. They made me go cold turkey. But, okay. I've been through worse things. I've gotten through it. And it's okay now. I'm in a beautiful space. For a while there, I thought I was going to be sleeping in my car, which I've done before, and it's not a new thing, so I can identify with you. You said, yes, I was in my car for a while. Oh, yes, I have a very comfortable car. The seat,
and you
the
can laugh
back,
about it.
Oh, yes. Yes, I can. Mm-hmm. I have to. I have mm-hmm. to because, oh, my God, I said, you know, I noticed you've been losing a lot of weight. I said, yes, it's called the homeless diet. You don't have a home. You don't have a kitchen ready. You can't cook. Therefore, you lose weight. So they laugh because they really think that I'm joking, but I'm so serious. I was so serious. The homeless diet. So, yeah, I can laugh about it. I have a little fantasy of being a comedian. I'm working on it. I'm going to go to one of these open mic nights. And just make comments about things that have happened in my life and about my children and I'm sure I can get people to laugh. I have my whole job. They're so enamored with me and my jokes and stuff. I keep them laughing all day long. And they say, you know, you take care of all of us. I'm like, yes, I know. So I'm going to take my act on the road. And I was so thankful for the opportunity when it presented myself itself to be on the radio show. I told my kids, they're like, Ma, you're smothering us. You're smothering us. And they're all gone now. So I'm like, okay, I'm finished with y'all. Now I'm going to go global.
I do. I want us to take this as far as it can go, you know.
Yes, I do, too. And I will talk to you a little more, Maria, and actually see what exactly your vision is, because I don't really know what it is. And so I can see what you see and then take this, assist you or us, and we take this where this is going to go.
Well, this is it. I want to do motivational speaking tours. I want to increase this show.
Okay.
You know, the monthly meet and greets are just that, for women of like minds and issues to come together. And we have different functions. But I'm ready to take this. I want to visit Susan in her hometown and meet Susanna face to face and Rebecca and you and everybody. I have something to say, and I think that, you know, we all have our story. And I was just on Facebook, actually, and a young lady sent me a friend request. And I wrote back, and I said, who are you, or do I know you? And she said, I was listening to your show on Blog Talk Radio. And I said, wow, okay.
Okay, that'll work.
You know, so this is, it's working, and we're getting the message out there, and I just think that it's so powerful what we're doing, and there's no barriers here. You know, we're all from different socioeconomic backgrounds, ethnicities, so it lets people know that hurt doesn't discriminate.
No, it sure doesn't. It comes across from everybody. Young, old, male, female, from a dollar to $1 million. It doesn't matter. My little grandbaby has just woken up. He's 8 months old, and he's a precious, gorgeous little thing. But he was on the bed with me, and everything was cool. I put him in the playpen, and he's like, uh-oh, I can't smell her. So he's like, yeah, I'm going to wake up. She's like, see, I know she's trying to move me.
I thought I heard a little person.
Yeah, I was on when we first started the show, and he woke up and started crying, so I didn't want to ruin the show. So I clicked it off, and then I came up on you. Hear him?
Uh-huh.
What's he doing? All right, so I'm going to hang up later so I can give him attention. It was my pleasure. And next Saturday, lady.
Next Saturday is going to be a huge show. next Saturday, I'll probably be working the switchboard more than anything else.
Okay.
So you won't hear me talking as much. I'll be getting the callers on and probably working the chat room. So
okay. I'm going to be working my family and friends and make sure they be on their calling. And,
yeah, next week is going to be a very interesting show.
Strong arm them some more. See if we can just call the ship up more. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Talk to everybody Saturday.
All righty. You have a good evening.
Okay. Bye-bye.
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 Wow, okay. That was Cheryl leaving us. Well, ladies, we've got about 7 minutes. Again, Susan, thank you so much for believing in me and supporting me.
Oh, you're welcome.
Because, you know, you didn't know me from anyone, and here we are.
Pardon me, you broke up there for a second. What did you say?
It's Skype. Oh, my goodness, it's terrible. But I was saying, you know, I wanted to thank you for believing in me enough to come on the show. And because initially, you know, you called and you didn't know me from Eve or anyone else in the world. And, you know, I've enjoyed listening to your story, and I'm really looking forward to next week. But again, often.
She's amazing. You will like Susanna. Everybody does. People just gravitate toward her.
Yeah, I'm so looking forward to that. And people are asking me questions, and I pretty much say, you really do need to be on it. You know, just come and
see if this works better. I'm trying something different other than Skype. But, be on the show. Listen to her story because, you know, people always make jokes and things. And I said, you know, you don't really know what she's been through, but she was born into it. And, you know, it's a different feel when you get someone that was actually there. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm finishing up the book. And, you know, we will see you back then. I'm sure you'll be here next week with her.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone wants to contact us, of course, 443-865-4211. If you have Susan, I don't know if you want to share any of your contact information in case people want to contact you directly. About 4 minutes.
They can actually contact us if they want through Susanna's website, which is the Susanna Barlow, Susanna Barlow is BARLOW.com. And she does have the a way to contact her. And when that email goes out, it goes to both Susanna and myself.
Oh, okay.
So that's the way. And that's a way that they can contact us. And my email is Susan, Susan, Garren, Garren, @gmail.com. So they can contact me that way.
Great.
As well. But the easiest way is to go through the website.
Yeah. Okay, and I'll make sure to put that up, you know, as well, to continue to prepare for next week. Great show again this week, very charged show, and wow, yeah, we've got a long way to go. We're helping people every single week, but we do have a long way to go. So I want to thank you again, Susan, for joining us. Rebecca,
Thank you.
To have you back.
Now, Rebecca, please give me a call or email me.
Yeah, surely, I will do that.
And then maybe we figure this mystery out.
No, I'm trying to figure it out myself.
I'll give you her number as soon as we go off air. I'll give you a call and give you her contact info, her number,
okay.
So that way you can call her direct. Or Susan, I'll call you, and however, I'll call you Rebecca because I'll, you know, touch base with you and give you Susan's phone number.
All right.
And, well, ladies, once again, great show. Again, next week, our special guest is Susanna Barlow, author of the memoir, What Peace There May Be. We look forward to you all joining us next week. Thank you so much for being here this evening. And on behalf of myself, I'm Maria Wall, and my co-host, Rebecca East, Autumn Williams, and Cheryl Carr, we thank you so much for joining us and supporting us. Susan, again, thank you for joining us. We look forward to seeing you next weekend, even beyond.
Okay.
Love to hear how Suzanne is going on tour and what she's doing, of course. And we'll see you next week. Have a great, great Sunday. And have a blessed week this week and even beyond. So thank you again for joining us on Healing Through Hurt Talk Radio, and we'll see you back next week.
Good night.
Good night. Hello?